Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron rights. Welcome to Gridiron Rights, football history and its memorabilia on the Gridiron Rights Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. Find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Varden. He has... from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Good to be on, Bob. Good to be on. Just seems like a couple days ago we spoke.
And it was. And very interesting responses from the last show. We'll touch base toward the end of the show on a few comments on that. But I'm going to start off with you have something pretty big going on this coming weekend, I think on Saturday, and fill in our audience on it.
Yeah, I do. I'm kind of nervous and starstruck about it. About 2 years ago, we're actually right before COVID, my wife is on the board of a local charity here called the Ronald McDonald House that helps kids with cancer and their families and housing. And an auction, a very unique auction item came up. And it was called Hall of Fame Dinner, Football Hall of Fame Dinner. And it was an opportunity to have a 7-course catered, meal from an amazing chef at someone's house in Bend, Oregon, which is in Eastern Oregon here. And it included 6 Hall of Fame, football, professional football players, 3 of which were Hall of Famers. So this Saturday, I am having dinner, my wife and I, along with 6 other couples, so 14 people and 5 football players. And the list is Drew Bledsoe, Dan Fouts, Ken Rutgers from Green Bay, he's your guy, Gary Zimmerman, and Kevin Boss.
Wow.
I know Drew Bledsoe owns a winery in Eastern Oregon Eastern Washington. And I know Dan Fouts you know, went to Oregon, went later on to play, you know, for the Chargers, obviously. And, you know, Gary Zimmerman also has a small house in Bend is what I've been told. So this Saturday at, let's hear, 6 o'clock Pacific time, I will be settling in and saying cheers with a nice Oregon Pinot to Dan Fouts and Drew Bledsoe. And it's not like a signing where you have like 5 seconds where they barely look up. This will be appetizers, dinner, dessert, et cetera. I mean, it'll be probably about 4 or 5 hours hanging out. And I'm nervous. I'm excited. I don't want to come off like an idiot, you know, and like, oh my gosh, et cetera. I was kind of texting the group. It's like, what do I say? What do I talk about that I don't, that's out of the ordinary. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think the two nice questions that any former player likes to be asked, and especially, you know, you grew up with a lot of those guys, so you saw them play. I know you were a big fan of Fouts. I would ask them straight out, what was the biggest moment in your football career, be it college or professional? And I would also ask them, who was the best coach or who was the coach that had the biggest influence on you in your career? I think those kind of questions you'll never go wrong with, number one. But number two, and more importantly, you know, you're interested in the guys, and it'd be kind of interesting to hear what they actually come back with and what they actually say. You know what I mean? And don't be nervous. Come on, man. I mean, they're normal human beings like anybody else. I heard Bledsoe is a real class act, though. His second career with the winery, I read about him a couple times in Wine Spectator magazine with the winery. And I would, one day, when if we ever can do our Washington to San Diego road trip out there, I'd like to hit his winery and see if he's around type of thing. I think that those would be the two biggest questions that you should ask them. That's just my opinion. What do you think you want to ask him, if anything?
Oh, well, you know, I have a sense of humor, so I kind of want to lead with a sense of humor where, like, Drew Bledsoe is like, you know, like, hey, I call you the Hall of Fame quarterback whisperer, you know, because you were, you know, the quarterback who got injured that led to Tom Brady, and then you went to Dallas, and you're the quarterback who got injured who led to Tony Romo. Has anyone ever made that correlation with him? Perhaps. I don't know, but I want to ask him, you know, just to set the tempo, maybe get a chuckle out of it. And you, who knows? With Dan Fouts, I mean, I worshiped this guy as a kid. I'm a Seahawks fan, but to be honest, I was a Chargers fan. I mean, I was cracking my wife up because we were talking about this to my sister, and I'm like, you know, Dan Fouts, you know, his straight back drop back, you know, most quarterbacks tilt, you know, turn and, you know, to a right angle and drop back. He's dropped straight back, you know, Kellen Winslow, right. Charlie Joyner, you know, John Jefferson. You think about, you know, Wes Chandler later on, think about the core that he's had. I mean, Fred Dean, Eric Coryell. I mean, that team, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. I just want to, you know, kind of explain to him what a huge fan I was. Just, you know, back in that day before all the quarterback protections and a 300-yard game was an average day at the office for Fouts, you know. Oh,
but I think Fouts would have, to me, Fouts is the most interesting of all the players for the simple reason. He's got a lot of history behind him, number one. But number two, he played in a slightly different era than the other guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he played, like you're saying, you know, he didn't have the protection like today where, you know, a flag drops up, somebody sneezes on a quarterback or whatever. If they look at Brady the wrong way, they get pass interference type of thing. I mean, roughing the passer. So that's going to be an interesting perspective that he would talk about. I'm wondering, though, also if these guys got, like, prepared or they have, for lack of a better term, a script they follow as far as what they talk about, so on and so forth, And are they all going to just want to talk about football? I know Buzzdo will probably want to talk about his vineyard and his wine a lot. But I'm sure, you know, obviously they got to talk about football. You know what I'm saying? So
That is great.
That is cool.
You know, Fouts spent just as much time in the broadcaster booth, too. I mean, that's kind of an interesting topic as well. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Oh, I would be. I would be. I mean, that's phenomenal to even think about. Sitting down with these guys, you know, two of the biggest things that Brenda and I enjoy, eating out and good wine. And you got that, and then throwing the football element. You couldn't ask for anything more.
Good grief. Throwing some football guys.
Yeah. That's great.
It's pretty cool. I mean, and what's weird is, you know, I know Fouts the best and Bledsoe second. I've never even heard of Ken, you know, Rutgers with Green Bay Packers. I mean, have you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was a good player for the Pack. You know, he was a grinded out type of guy. And who are the other two guys? Zimmerman?
Yeah, Gary Zimmerman.
From
Vikings
from Minnesota.
Broncos. From Minnesota, yep. His 87 rookie card was very sought after for a while. And then Kevin Boss, and it's listed here as New York Giants, Las Vegas Raiders, and Kansas City Chiefs. And if you played with the Vegas Raiders, that means what, in the last 4 years? You know, you play. I plan on looking up, you know, having some
cribs
on every player before I head over.
I would definitely do that. I think the more you're educated about each player, and it would be so cool for you just to be seated right next to Fouts for the night. You know what I mean? That type of thing.
Yeah.
And
he's going to get tired of me. I mean, I'm such a huge Chargers fan from that era.
Yeah. Don't, you know, and again, I don't know if you know the other couples you're going with. So there could be, you know, another supercharger fan there or whatever type of thing. It'd be interesting to see the dynamics of everyone there. But the nicest part I find is a small amount of people. So it's very intimate.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a small, you know, an actual private dinner party with five former NFL players. I mean, that is cool. I really like, you know, that whole concept. That's amazing to.
Yeah.
To. When you think about it.
As weird as it sounds, a dinner with just Dan Fouts would be a cool night. A dinner with Fouts and Bledsoe would be a cool night. You know what? Let's sprinkle in three other football players. You know, Gary Zimmerman is a Hall of Fame player. I mean, you know, it's pretty cool. And like you said, I should probably buy a bottle of Bledsoe's wine and bring it like, hey, I brought, you know, I found this at 7-Eleven, you know, which is like a convenient. I found this at a Circle K and, you know, it was on sale for $2.
I thought I'd bring
it, you know, just as a joke, you know, about his wine.
What I would do is ask him to sign it. I think that'd be pretty cool. That'd be a cool
book,
you know,
have
him sign the label. I'm sure he would enjoy it. Don't tell him where you bought it. Tell him you bought it at a wine store or whatever. Don't say you bought it at the local gas station in Fresno.
But you know, Todd Tobias wrote a book. You know, he did his master's thesis on the Chargers of that, you know, that Sid Gilman era.
Right.
But he has a book called Bombs Away that he sent me once.
Yep.
I plan on taking that book.
I'm looking at mine right now over here.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
That's really cool. Nice.
I don't know what your the perimeters of you know, they don't want. I mean, obviously, they are hoping the five couples are going to be, or six couples are going to be very, very relaxed about the whole thing. You know, the guys aren't going to come with 25 different cards and sign all these, you know, just your name, you know, type of thing. You don't want to do something like that. But something special. And make sure you tell them, could you sign it to Joe? That would be very cool. That would be very, very cool. And if Ken has any memorabilia there, just tell him that, I'm a, throw out a word for me with the Packer shareholder, so on and so forth. No.
You're right. You're right. Obviously, it'd be very awkward to bring, you know, hey, here's 20 things. Can you sign these? And be like, all right, let's tone this down a little bit. Yeah, I never even considered that. It was, you know, the Tobias book, I think, would be about it. And a bottle of wine. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like it. I don't know. I'm excited. We're driving out on a Friday night to stay at our place out there, and then going to head on over. Cool. It's just, I'm looking forward to the picture, too, with everybody, you know, kind of seated around. So,
yeah.
You know?
Well, I expect on my phone later that evening some pictures from you showing me the fun.
It'll be past your bedtime by then on the East Coast, but I'll
No, actually, like I was telling you before, we leave Thursday, and we are actually going on a vacation that we purchased back in November 2019. We're going into Prague, and from Prague, we're taking a river cruise to Budapest in Hungary, and we're stopping along the way in Germany, Slovakia, Austria, and we're pretty excited about it, even though it's 4 years later since I bought it. But we did a Paris, a French river cruise, which was incredible, back in 2019. And the same company offers several different tours, and it's a river cruise, so it's a very small boat. And it's very interesting to travel on it. And real nice day excursions, too. Real good food
and
wine.
Cool.
We're going to hit a couple of vineyards, actually in Austria, which is going to be very cool. So we're really looking forward to it. So I'm going to be discombobulated time-wise since I'm flying out 6 o'clock on Thursday night, getting into Paris at basically 2 o'clock in the morning our time, which is 8 o'clock in the morning their time, and then have a layover over there until we get to Prague. So I should be a good pretty well reset by Sunday, one way or the other. But I'll be looking forward to your report after. Sounds great.
Yep, absolutely.
Our special guest is here, and I'd like to introduce him. He has written for many sports websites and has the long-running Steelers Hotline as his own website. He's currently a writer for Abstract Sports website, and he's also a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine. He was the winner of the 2001 Visa Hall of Fame Fans Award, being named the biggest Pittsburgh Steelers fan of that year. He has a plaque bearing his name placed in the Pro Football Hall of Fame to represent it. From that award came his book, Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans. He currently owns the YouTube channel Sports History Remembered, which recalls events from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s and more. And believe it or not, he was last on our podcast way back in 2014. A friend of the magazine and of many, I'd like to welcome to the show this evening, Mr. Harv Aronson. Hi. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, gentlemen. And I appreciate you having me on your show. Again, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that it's been 9 years since the last appearance. I was just thinking about that today, saying, my goodness, it can't really be 9 years. But I'm glad
I feel really old. I'm feeling more and more old when I'm going back this many years. I say, holy mackerel. So, but anyways, thanks for coming back on, and thanks for all you do for the magazine, too. You've written some very, very great articles, and we've got great feedback on them over the years, and we've got a great national issue coming up, too, and I know your article you wrote is, and we're going to keep it secret for now. But you got a great article coming up in our summer issue for the National.
Well, I appreciate all the videos, and I love writing for your magazine.
Thank you. It's a lot of sweat that goes into that magazine, and I think a lot of people realize, you know, we're not doing it for the glory, we're not doing it for the profit. I mean, we're doing it to preserve football history and to help the hobby.
Absolutely.
And help a lot of guys who've been forgotten about in both college
Absolutely.
And professional football. So, lead off, Harv, I'd like to ask you, if you could tell our audience how you got interested in sports, football, and the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, I've been asked this question many, many times, and I always give the same answer. My love for sports, I've got to attribute to Roberto Clemente. My first love of sports was baseball, and I can still recall seeing in my mind 1971 World Series, Clemente at bat in the seventh game of the World Series and hits a home run. And from that point on, that spurred my interest in sports. And then a year later, I began to watch the Steelers and then became a diehard Steelers from that year and every year since, 1972.
That's great.
And
that was a
and
great.
Clemente became my boyhood idol. And I'll tell you guys, I can still see myself where I was on Christmas Eve, 72, when he was killed in a plane crash. I can remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah. So sad.
We normally.
Way too soon.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
we
I'll
normally
you,
only like to talk about that. We normally only like to talk about football here, but we will make an exception for Roberto Clemente, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I became a Steelers fan, and Steelers fan since. And back then, the Immaculate Reception, they had the rule of blackout rule, and so if the game was not sold out, you couldn't watch it in your own town.
No.
And I
still see
myself sitting
about
in the driveway at my home. Listening to it on the radio. That's how I had to listen to it. I couldn't see it.
Oh, man. Wow. That's horrible. Yeah.
But my father was at the game. And I remember him telling me that everybody thought the game was over and a guy in front of him was eating a plate of chicken. And when the plate took off, it just got through his chicken up in the air. And, of course, it landed on my father, so he didn't appreciate that.
Those are good memories.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
That was in the fourth quarter. What was this guy doing eating chicken right before heading home? Come on.
They said Art Rooney was already in the tunnel on the way to the locker room to congratulate his players on a great season. He didn't see the play either.
Oh, wow.
He thought the game was over. Yeah, he thought the game was over as well.
Nice. Well, Harvey, Bob mentioned your YouTube channel, Sports History Remembered. And as I joked a little bit ago, you know, we're very football centric.
Right.
I've spent quite a bit of time on your YouTube channel last couple of days. You cover everything. Now you've got a video on NHL champions, every NBA champion, boxing knockouts. Heck, you get all the way down to your top 15 movies that I just finished watching earlier today. That was pretty cool. It's a really cool little sports-centric YouTube channel. Tell us a little bit about that and why you started it.
Well, my wife was actually the one who suggested the idea because she, she follows my writing and everything, and she thought it would be a good idea to have my own YouTube channel. And my interest has always been in sports history. You know, I don't get me wrong, I still watch current sports today. I don't have the same feeling I had for when I grew up, which was the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s. So I made that the theme of the channel. I focus primarily on that era because that's when I grew up. But occasionally, as you've seen, Joe, I will gravitate away from those years. If I find a topic that's interesting and historic from another era, because, I love football, love it to death, but I'm an all-around sports fan. I've followed all different sports throughout my whole life. Boxing is still kind of a big sport for me to watch, but I'm more focused now on MMA. I really fall in love with that sport. But I still follow baseball, hockey. I like golf even. I like watching golf when Tiger Woods is playing. So I'll cover any sport, as long as there's an interesting idea for it. And so the YouTube channel just channels to my interest in history, sports history. I love sports history, and I thrive on that. And so, I don't want to do anything current. I'd rather prefer to focus on sports history because there is so much rich history, as you guys know.
So it looks like your first video was a welcome video from 3 months ago. So, I mean, you just started it about 3 months ago?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm up to I was warned it's going to take a while for the channel to grow. But I've got 17 subscribers now, and I started out with maybe two or three the first couple of weeks, so it is starting to grow, which is really nice. And I'm not worried about the size, because I just like my writing, I just enjoy doing it. And so it's not going to matter so much as the audience. It's me having the hobby I like, which is writing and speaking. That was my original goal, actually, coming out of college, was to be a sports broadcaster. Obviously, that didn't work out, but, you know, writing I will continue to do forever.
That's cool. Well, good. You might want to check those numbers, because I joined yesterday, and I've spent most of the day, you know, watching videos on your channel. It's really cool. Because, I mean,
I love your
shout out to the Rocky 2 and 3 movies, you know, when you edited it together. Your Raging Bull, one of your top movies.
Uh-huh.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, I said I was a big boxing fan, so Rocky is absolutely my number one movie. Those are my favorites of all time, for sure.
Hmm. Well done. It was really cool.
It's interesting today, you know, I'm not big on the MMA or the UFA, FA for the fighting. I'm still more of a pure boxing purist, for lack of a better way of explaining it. And but I hear more and more guys say they like the MMA, they like the UFA, FA, as far as, you know, that type of boxing and martial arts mix, so on and so forth. So I find that interesting because, again, in sports history, we're more focused on classic boxing. I don't think there's really a lot of classic boxing that takes place anymore. If there's a match out there, so on and so forth, I think it's pretty watered down one way or the other. And you're not really seeing good fights like you saw, you know, Ali, Liston, Foreman, Spinks, all those guys. You're not just seeing that anymore. And I think a lot of them have switched over to the other type of fighting, which, again, it's just not appealing to me. And, again, you know, I'm a grumpy old man now, it just, like I said, doesn't do anything for me. But it's interesting. A lot of guys, especially younger guys, really love it. It's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you could bring back the 60s, 70s, and even some of the 80s in boxing, I would absolutely be watching that, because growing up in that era, there were so many great fighters.
Yeah.
I used to be able to tell you who was who, and now I can hardly name one or two boxers that are fighting.
Right. Same here. Definitely same here.
Totally.
Tell us, Harv, about Abstract Sports, and I know you write for them. Give us some background on that.
Okay, well, I discovered this sports website, Abstract Sports, and then I connected with the owner. His name is Kyle Richards. And I asked him if I could write for him, and he welcomed me aboard, and I became a regular contributor for them. So Abstract Sports covers all sports, an array of sports topics. And so when I have a good idea for a story on any sport, he'll post it for me. So that site is kind of cool because it opens up the avenues for any topic I want to cover, and he'll publish anything I write. So I kind of use that one to talk about other topics outside of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then what he'll do sometimes, too, is he'll take one of my stories that has a video attached to it on my channel and embed that video within the story on his site, which is really cool. Because this way now somebody can read the article but also watch the video. I think he did that one with the John Elway draft that I did, the special on the 83 draft a week or two ago. It was on This Day in Sports. Every Wednesday I do a video on This Day in Sports, and I'll look for an event that took place hopefully in the 60s, 70s, 80s that I can focus on, and then I'll do a video surrounding that one. So that day that John Elway was drafted, that was celebrated this year, I did a little video on John Elway being drafted and the whole story behind that and how he didn't want to play for Baltimore and that whole fiasco that happened. And so he published a story on that in his site, and as well put the video in that I had done for that.
Yeah, it's a cool website, and I know they I'm pretty sure I follow them, and they follow me on the Gridiron Mag Twitter account we have, and very, very interesting articles there. And how long have you been writing for them?
Oh, my gosh. I'd say
it's been a while now.
4 years. About 4 years, maybe even longer. Not sure. It's been a while.
Okay.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I was really impressed. Bob mentioned your Steelers Fan of the Year award. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. Have been for most of my life, and so obviously, the 2005 Super Bowl that the officials kind of stole away from Seattle is still fresh in my mind. I think we even talked about that in our last show. I know you're disappointed that it was a Steelers trophy, but I mean, hey, tell us about that. What the process is? We had a gentleman on our show a couple years ago who won the top fan. Just help me with that, Bob. What was it that Show Dog Ray Prisby won? It was
It was Ford sponsored the number one number one fan of that Ford contest, and that was a nationwide contest that they were doing, and you had to vote on it. So it was a little different than the Visa fan.
I think that's newer.
I think they're still running that too, guys, because I researched it today, and they named somebody last year. So I think they're doing it on a yearly basis now, because there was a 2022.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But as far as the Visa goes, and before I get into that story, Joe, I'm sure you know Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk. You've seen them?
Mr. and Mrs. Seahawk. Pardon me?
Yeah, they wear that. They're a husband-wife team, and they're always on television. And so they paint their face, and they got the spiked-up hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know them personally. So.
Oh, cool.
And into this award we're about to get into, that's how I actually met them. So what happened with me and with them as well, in 1999, Charge Card Company Visa, they began a contest called Visa Hall of Fans Award. So what they did was they chose one fan from every NFL team to represent their respective team in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was based on an essay they had to write as to why they should be chosen as that one lucky fan. So I submitted my essay. Actually, I wrote it, submitted it, and then forgot about it. And I got a call when they were getting ready to announce it from this marketing agency. And they said, you're a potential winner in the Visa Hall of Fans Award. I said, oh, my gosh, I forgot I even entered that thing. And they said, well, we'll call you later this week and let you know who won. So that Friday of 2001, which was around end of November, December, they said, yeah, you're the winner. I said, what? So they said, yeah. I said, what happens now? They said, well, you're going to have to go to Heinz Field. We will have two tickets waiting for you, field level, goal, end zone, field level, first row. And so they'll present a plaque to you at the 50-yard line. Before the game starts.
Wow.
On the Jumbotron, and so I was like, wow, this is really super cool. So it was December 9th, 2001. I went down. They were playing the Jets. And sure enough, I got to the stadium at Heinz Field, and they came over and told me how it was going to work. And right before the game started, they came and got me, walked me out to the 50-yard line. Cy Holzer, who was the president of PNC Bank at the time, was the one that handed the plaque off to me. He did his little speech or whatever he did, and then he handed this thing to me, and I look up, and I'm on the Jumbotron. I'm like, what? All right, I'm on cloud nine now, in front of all my hometown fans, people I know had season tickets. I'm sure were in the stands. I'm sure they saw it. And so they cheered. I waved my terrible towel. I walked back to my seat, and this big old gentleman stands up in front of me, and he says, hello there. I'm Charles Davis. I played for the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1974 and won a Super Bowl. I just wanted to congratulate you. I was like, this is even better now. So Charles Davis and I took a picture together, and so I thought that was the end of it. I had my 15 minutes in the sun. But the next year, I was invited by previous winners to come to Canton, Ohio, to join them and other people who won the award up to that point, as well as the people along with me in 2001 that won the award, to celebrate having won the award and take part in the Hall of Fame festivals and the festivities for the NFL players that were being inducted that year. So what they do is they take your plaque, they put it on display in a special wing that they had called the Hall of Fans wing, and that stays on display for 1 year. And then the next winners will get theirs put up and ours, you know, just goes away. But they actually have a Hall of Fame Day parade that takes place on that Saturday at the Hall of Fame. So all these fans were in the on a float in the parade, so I got to be, take part in the float, which is really neat. But the part about it was meeting the other fans. So this award ran until 2005, but the whole neat part about the process was meeting the other fans. Some of them are famous in their own right, and I know you'll know the names, but one of the first guys I met was John Big Dog Thompson from the Browns. And, I mean, I knew who he was for years. I mean, you see him in the end zone all the time with his dog bone, his mask and everything. I'm like, oh, I'm staying in front of that guy. Super nice guy. Super nice guy. It was so much fun. And then there was Tim, they call him Barrel Man, McKernan. And you may have seen him out in Denver. So I got to meet Tim. Unfortunately and sadly, he passed away a few years after I met him. But at least I got the opportunity to meet him because he's this really, really down-to-earth guy. But I asked him, I said, so what's with the barrel? He said he took a bet from a friend that they dared him to go into Mile High Stadium wearing a barrel, a pair of boots, and a cowboy hat, and nothing else. So he took the challenge, painted up this barrel with the Denver Broncos, orange barrel, and went in there, and he was such a hit that the Denver Broncos asked him to come back every game, and you have a season ticket. You can come in every game just as long as you're wearing the barrel, the boots, and the hat. And he became very famous after that.
So this is a big social thing. I mean, you got to meet the other – you know, the other, you know, top fans from the other teams in kind of a gathering, you know, kind of a Highlander-esque gathering, you know, at the Hall of Fame. And then they had your plaque up and it, for a year, and then next year's winner, gets their plaque, and then they give you your plaque, correct?
Well, I don't know what happened to the plaque that was in the hall, because they give you one at Heinz Field and you keep that, or I kept that one. What became of the one in the Hall of Fame, I have no idea. But, yeah, that was the best part, though, meeting all these other fans, because, you know, you see these games where opposing fans are fighting and they're fisticuffs and arguing, screaming. These people, all we did was hang out, party together, and just had a great time. No arguments, just having fun and talking football. It was awesome. And, I mean, there's so many fans. I felt intimidated because some of these fans are so famous. And I was like, little old me hanging out with Barrel Man and Big Dog and Big Nasty from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You may have seen him on television with a big horn on his helmet, was up there. And there was a guy named Birdman from Philadelphia, hung out with him. So it was really neat to be in that kind of crowd.
Was the fireman from the Jets there? I forgot.
He did not come.
Do you remember?
Well, actually, I think he did come to one ceremony. Now, we're going to talk about the book here in a few minutes, but he was in my book, Fireman Ed.
Right.
And, yeah, I believe he might have been at one. I only went to two reunions, but I think he may have been at one of them, if I remember correctly.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because I met him at I was at a Jets-Packers game, and he had set up shop, called set up shop. He was in the parking lot after, and I went up and I was talking to him. I had my Bart Starr jersey on it. He was cool about the whole thing. I mean, I really got him busted on me, you know, trying to walk back to the car when we were going back. But he was really nice to me, and I had talked to him about a few things. But he was cool. He was cool to talk to.
Where's your 2001 Visa Hall of Fame Fan Award now? I mean, they gave it back to you when the new person was brought in. I would assume.
Well, the one that stays at the hall, whatever the hall did with it, I'm not sure.
Oh,
mine,
gotcha.
Of course, is stored away here. But I know when they ended it in 2005, there was a lot of fans disappointed that they were ending it, and they took away the Hall of Fame's wing. So it no longer exists. And there was a rally to try to get them to keep it. Because obviously without fans, you don't have a game. I mean, as simple as that. And I think the fans, this was a great thing because the fans should be honored. I mean, they're a big makeup of any sport, especially.
Exactly. That's for sure. I wonder if you contacted the Hall of Fame and just asked them, is your plaque still there? You like to buy it from them or whatever? I mean, I don't know. I can almost guarantee you it's in a storage room somewhere in Canton or a storage facility.
Here's the other thing. So when I went up there, all these fans created their own organization. It's called Professional Football Ultimate Fans Association. And so they're still in existence. They still gather every year at the Hall of Fame. But what had happened was when Visa dropped the ball and said, we're not going to do it anymore, they took it upon themselves to go out and seek their own number one fan for the year. So they're doing their own thing now still. And when we're about to talk about the book, but when I brought up the idea of the book, they wanted nothing to do with it because it wasn't going to include any of their fans. My book, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, was only about the people that won it from the time that they ran it to the time they ended it.
Wow. That's amazing. So when you take all your writing together and you look at this Fan of the Year award and your book from it, do you have any stories of people that you may have interviewed over the years from any of your articles or your books that you could share with the audience, with our audience, as far as that really stood out? That really, you know, as a writer, I know when I hit upon somebody and it's just a golden interview, or if it's a golden collection I'm looking at, or the perfect collection type of thing, it just blows my mind that I'm talking to them. You know what I mean? So have you had any of the experiences with that over the years?
Yeah, unfortunately, in writing, I've never had the opportunity to actually interview a professional athlete for any of my articles that I've written. But as you guys know, I wrote the book Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans, and that was based off this Visa Hall of Fans Award. And so if you look at the book, each fan in the book, I interviewed them and, you know, I got them to assist in building a profile of themselves and rewrote that. And so I know each of them all personally, and they're a great group of people. I mean, and we dedicated the book to Barrowman because by the time I got to writing the book and getting it published, he unfortunately passed, and it was not expected. So I spoke to his wife, and she helped me write the foreword to the book, which is dedicated to him. Because if you got to know Tim McKiernan, Barrowman, just a great, great individual, such a nice guy. And so it was a no-brainer to dedicate the book to him. And there are several other fans that had also passed that are in the book. But I interviewed each one of these fans and got their stories. And a lot of them, as we said before, they're some of them are worldwide known. I mean, and they're all popular in their own respective NFL cities and famous in their own right. So, you know, I got to know all of them. But I have met some players and spoken to them, just never in an article type of atmosphere, but, a training camp and autograph signings. I've met up with Dermoni Dawson. I've had a picture taken with him. And of course, we mentioned Charles Davis. I've met LeVon Kirkland. I had a picture taken with him. I went to a baseball card show one time, and Moose Scourin was signing autographs, so that was kind of cool because I had heard of him. I knew who he was, so that was kind of neat. But, unfortunately, a lot of my articles are just basically research-based, but I would love to have an opportunity to interview somebody at some point, and maybe that will happen.
I was talking about your YouTube video that I frequented over the weekend and today. Tell us, tell our viewers where people can find that. And you have a book that came out. Where can we find that?
Okay, so Pro Football's Most Passionate Fans. Now I've lost touch with the organization, but initially, and I was trying to check today to see if it's still selling and all, but. Initially, we were, and it says it on the book, we were dedicating any proceeds to a cancer foundation for kids. But over the years, you know, it's been so long, we just lost touch with that. And the company that published the book didn't really keep up with me on sales. So I don't know how well it's going, but it is available still. I mean, it's still out there. I was looking at it today, and it's on a million sites. I couldn't believe how many sites I was finding my book on. I was like, how does it even end up on these other sites? Some were overseas in a foreign language. I was like, wow, that's weird. but primarily it's on Amazon.com, and you can go to Barnes & Noble. If you just Google it and then go to shopping or something like that, you'll find it. So it's still out there. As far as the channel goes, of course, we talked about how it got created. If you go to YouTube and you just type in Sports History Remembered, it's going to come up. It's the only one. It's out there, and it's the only one named that. It's an easy find. At first, when I started creating the channel, I was saying to myself, well, how am I going to come up with enough topics? But it seems like every day I'm coming up with some other thought of what to cover. And I got plenty of ideas that I still want to do.
Yeah, you got all the sports to cover. I mean, like I was saying, you've got, NHL champions, NBA champions. I watched not to get off on a tangent here, but one of my favorite videos you did was on the 1974 Steelers draft. And wrote an article once about, the football card, set with the most Hall of Famers in it, and et cetera. And, which draft had the most Hall of Famers and stuff like that. But I loved your point. That 1974 Steelers draft netted five Hall of Famers: John Stallworth, Lynn Swan, Jack Lambert, Webster, and Donnie Schell. And I was like, man, that's a good point. How the hell, I mean, five Hall of Famers, that just incredible. Talk about good drafting.
Yeah, and the crazy part is Lynn Swan was the only first rounder. That's the knack of the Steelers have, is that they find talent even in deeper rounds. I mean, you look at throughout the history of those 70s teams, and a lot of those players came from small schools and were drafted beyond like the fourth, fifth rounds. It's crazy how so many people passed them by. Similar to what Tom Brady went through now. I mean, look how long he lasted. It's crazy. But the Steelers have a knack for finding talent where nobody else sees these guys.
Yeah. That set the tempo for a long time. But, which draft was better, that 1974 Steelers draft or 1976 Seahawks trading to Houston for Steve Largent? I mean, let's think about that.
they had some other players in that draft too that weren't Hall of Famers, but were definitely worthy players. I mean, they had cornerback's name. I forget his name now. I just was looking at it the other day, but there was a couple other players there that were drafted that really had a little bit of an impact as backup players. So that was a great draft. And And I did a special on this year's draft. I think the Steelers are outstanding in this year's draft. Oh, my gosh. They got some really good, talented players.
Yep. It was interesting. I want to say, like, the 1957 draft yielded the most Hall of Famers in NFL history, something like that, if I can remember that article, that I wrote correctly. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you guys weren't aware, Steelers, they originally had Johnny Unitas in their hands and let him go. They didn't think he was good enough.
Yeah, that's another classic bad move on the part of the team. Good grief. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Just one point to what you're saying as far as having a lot of thoughts and ideas. And I go back to there's really no publication today that incorporates all the different sports all at once, like Sports Illustrated used to do and like Sport Magazine used to do to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But, we don't realize sometimes there are a lot of sports out there besides the big four team sports. And soccer, which has, obviously gained a lot of popularity over the past 30 years at the same time. And it's kind of interesting to go through an old Sports Illustrated and see what the articles were on, especially with the more obscure sports and or like golf, tennis, horse racing, the Olympics, auto racing, and not just NASCAR racing, but, Grand Prix racing, things of that nature, fishing, deep-sea fishing and power boating and all that kind of stuff. It's very interesting to read that. So you do have for that your station there, the YouTube channel. You have a lot of information you can go through as far as highlighting something.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember the magazine, the Sports History. I used to subscribe to that.
Yep.
And that was basically nothing but history on different sports. So my wife actually kidded me once and said I should start my own magazine similar to that. And I would love to do that one day. I mean, that would be awesome. But, you know, it also goes back to the Wide World of Sports. They used to cover just about anything. They had all kinds of crazy sporting events on in Saturday afternoons. It was a great era to grow up.
Yep.
I always brag about the 70s.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, for example,
I mean, just so much.
For example, I see bowling back on TV, which I'm very surprised.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's just where we are here, but I'm seeing PBA bowling again, which I find fascinating to watch again. And I was really big in the 60s and early 70s.
Well, here's a good story.
Whatever reason.
Real quickly. Yeah, I'm sorry. But I used to be part of the Steelers fan club down here. I actually ran it in Jacksonville. I was the president for a long time. So Jerome Bettis was coming to town for an autograph signing. I don't know if you guys were aware, but he could be a professional bowler. He's that good.
I didn't know that.
Our venue that we had the club at had a bowling alley in it. So we encouraged him to come over, and he agreed to come one game against one of our fans. Of course, he won, but it was just like one frame or something. Then he would sign autographs after that. But he was deciding what fan to pick, and to this day I'm embarrassed, but he picked one of our drunkest fans. I was like, oh, no, please. So he bowled one game against this guy that was already stone drunk, and then he sat down and did autographs. But that was pretty cool. But, yeah, he had an average of like 90 or something. I forget what, 280, something like that. He was good bowler. Yeah, he's really, really a good bowler. Excellent. And he thought about going pro bowler once, but of course, he chose football, which is all good for the Steelers.
Wow. That's funny.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, what did how did the drunk fan do? What was the final score?
Well, when he wasn't tripping over his own feet, it was embarrassing. I was like, oh, please, not this guy. But it was very quick. I mean, it was just one frame. And then he sat down and did autographs, and basically he only signed for about 10 minutes, too, which was kind of a disappointment. So he was rushed out of there. But at least I got to meet him and got his autograph. So it was kind of cool.
Maybe Jerome picked that guy, you know, so he could be guaranteed to win.
Yeah, probably. But no, I bet it's an outstanding bowler, though, for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned your draft this year, the Steelers draft. What was it in particular? I kind of followed the Seahawks draft and a little bit of the Kansas City Chiefs, but what was the Steelers draft that you're really happy with?
Well, the first round pick, that kid out of Georgia playing offensive line, is going to be a huge plus. I mean, he's going to give us some really good protection on the line, and that should help Kenny pick it out. And then the second round, they picked Joey Porter's son, which is going to be really cool. He's going to be highly popular in Pittsburgh, I'm sure. And he's a defensive back, and he's supposed to be pretty good. He's out of Penn State. And we need help in the secondary. So hopefully he's the real deal. Then they got a couple of wide receivers, some good linebackers. It was just overall, they covered all bases. I think they're going to come back strong. And the cool thing about it is they were in such a threat last year to end Mike Tomlin's streak of winning seasons. I really thought when they were 3-7, this is going to be it. This is going to be his first losing season ever. And they turned it around and ended up with 9-8 records. But I think that was it. That was as close as he's going to come, because I think this year's team is going to be way better than last year's.
Good deal.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Wow. All right, any final thoughts? We're getting close to our show here.
Yeah. Other than that, I just want to take the opportunity to thank you guys for having me on your show once again and being able to chat with you, Joe, and It's always a pleasure. I must really say I do really enjoy writing for Gridiron Greats. And, Bob, I hope you never let me go, man, because I'll keep writing for you as long as you want me to. It's a fantastic magazine, and it's an honor that you've given me the opportunity to write for you on many football topics. And anything you request, I will always comply with you. Whatever you want written, I'll do it. I look forward to writing the next article. I know we have one in the hopper, so that's going to be coming. But after that, I'll be ready for the next one and perhaps join you again one day on the show again. I'd love to be back on if you want me on.
Oh, that's cool.
Sounds great. And I appreciate everything you do for the magazine, Harvey. It is definitely appreciated. And we get a lot of nice compliments of your articles. And we do have a lot of Steeler fans that read the magazine, too. So that also adds to what you're writing and makes it, you know, people look forward to it. People want to read about their favorite team. Unfortunately, I can't write 32 different articles on 32 different teams, but we're pretty steady as far as what we know our audience likes and what they really look forward to. So, Harvey,
well,
I appreciate it.
You know, Bob, I don't always have to stick to the Steelers, you know, Bob. You can, if you need something else aside from the Steelers, just ask away, man. I'll do it. It doesn't have to be Steelers.
I appreciate it, and I know I can count on you, so I'll see what obscure topic I can come up with for the fall issue. No, I'm only kidding.
I love a challenge. I love a challenge.
All right. Thanks for being on, Herb. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You guys take care of yourselves.
Thanks, Herb.
Take care. All right, we're winding down. If you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats Magazine, please check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. Going into our two-minute warning, and Joe, I'm going to hand off to you. What'd you pick up on tonight's show?
A great guest. Despite being a Steeler fan, still a great guest. I remember, I think I did a Joe quiz when we had Harv on originally that was talking about Terrible Towel or 12th man fan. I mean, as I was reading up on him, I was kind of laughing. I'm like, okay, I remember having Harv on.
Yeah, it's cool. His book, the fan book, was really interesting. I know I looked at it real quick again yesterday, reviewing some stuff and remembering. And Harv's written for quite a while for the magazine, so very interesting. He's got a nice style that I know a lot of readers enjoy, and again, he has literally an encyclopedic knowledge of the Steelers, so it's cool.
Mm.
And he's into all sports, and that makes it even more interesting to me, because we sadly become specialists in everything. But I still on occasion enjoy watching another sport or whatever type of thing, and a lot of other people do, even though I am known and do concentrate only on football. Real quick, you probably didn't see any. Did you watch any of the XFL championship game by any chance?
I did not. I actually did not. I meant to kind of hunker down. I heard you talking about, you were talking about one, or I think writing about it on VFC, and I meant to grab a game. I just never got it.
It was a very, very good game. It was well played. I really enjoyed the XFL this year. I thought it was a good brand of football. A lot of guys hungry to play. You know, they want to play. They were doing good. I enjoyed the league. The USFL still doesn't have it for me. They're still too, I don't know what a good term is. Still too, I don't know. It's like a clean product type of thing. It's not overly natural. The play flow just isn't there for me. But again, they're controlled by TV money, so they're going to be around for quite a while.
Hmm.
All right, we've got about 30 seconds. Any more thoughts, Jeff?
All right. Well, thank you for the ideas for what to talk about at the Hall of Fame dinner. I will obviously send our group text chat a picture, and I'm looking forward to it. Pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what happens and your experience. You should have a great time. I want you to have a great time there That's a once-in-a-lifetime deal, so that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, we won't be back until June for several shows we're lining up at this time. Until then, everybody have a great Memorial Day, and we will talk in June. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.